This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Utopia Media Voting News. We're about to talk to Gail Audette, who's a principal owner and a hardworking vice president of engineering at SysTest, an ITA, Independent Testing Authority. We're going to find out just everything there is to know about what that is as soon as we talk to her. Welcome to Utopia Media Voting News.
Well, thank you, Mark.
The immediate precipitating incident for this conversation is an announcement I got in my email saying that SysTest Labs was now partnering with Percept Technology Labs to become, quote, the only full independent test authority, ITA, for U.S. election systems. Why'd you do this?
Well, we did this for a number of reasons. Prior to us being awarded the hardware ITA, there was only one other ITA, hardware ITA in the country, physically located in Huntsville, Alabama. And logistically, it would be a big advantage to be closer. We do interface with the hardware ITA and the equipment occasionally, and having them just down the road as opposed to across the country.
You mean Percept is just down the road?
Yes.
Okay, and this is down the road where exactly?
It's in Boulder, Colorado.
Boulder, Colorado. Okay. Tell people who haven't been following this with great interest for many years what an independent test authority is and why they're important.
Independent test authorities are the test organizations for the voting systems. We test against the Federal Election Commission, the FEC, voting system standards. They are federal regulations, so we test against the federal regulations.
Okay, maybe you could clarify something, or whether this has been changing or whether it's just been confused or not. It's my understanding that the Federal Election Commission has passed off the authority to make the voting standards to the Election Assistance Commission, or EAC. Is that right?
It's in process of being transitioned.
Okay.
Currently, NACED and the EAC are still working together. It hasn't fully transitioned as far as the qualification of labs and the awarding of the certification. It hasn't completely transitioned at this time.
Okay, you mentioned another organization that I'm sure not everyone knows about. It's NASED, N-A-S-E-D, which stands for the National Association of State Election Directors. Where do they fit into this picture?
They were prior to the HAVA Act.
One more acronym, Help America Vote Act.
Yes.
Of 2002.
So sorry.
Right.
Prior to HAVA, NASED was the certifying agency for the voting systems, and they were the ones who developed with the FEC the voting system standards that are currently in effect. Today.
Okay. When were those finalized or developed or issued?
Yeah, there was a 1990 standard, and then much more recently, the 2002 was approved and widespread in May of 2002.
May 2002, and that was essentially the product of the Federal Election Commission working with the National Association of State Election Directors.
Yes.
And those are known pretty much as the 2002 standards.
Yes.
And are those the current operative standards for all voting machines in the United States now?
Yes.
Okay.
And I refer to that as the VSS, and I use that acronym. Quite freely.
What is it? How do you refer to it?
The VSS, the Voting System Standards.
Oh, VSS, Voting System Standards, right. Okay, or the 2002 VSS. Or,
yeah.
Okay. I know they're lengthy and complicated, but what's the essence of those 2002 standards? What do they say is important that a voting machine be able to do before it can be used?
Well, the VSS lays down minimum federal requirements, and that the ITA's test to.
Right.
And it's very important to understand what the ITAs do as opposed to what we don't.
Okay, tell us.
Yes, I'll tell you. We test to the VSS. We don't test to get a certification number from NASED.
Right.
It is that the software, the system, the voting system has been tested against the federal standards. So what we do is called qualification testing.
Okay.
And qualification testing means that we've looked and made sure that the hardware, software, and the documentation for the voting system has been defined, reviewed, and tested for conformity with the requirements defined within the VSS. Qualification testing means that the voting system contains a method to create elections,
right.
Write a ballot, record votes, report tallies, and produce an audit trail. And it means that all the code has been reviewed by the ITA. It's a line by line.
Right.
Eyeball on each line of code.
Right.
And it means that the documentation required to help jurisdictions run the election is accurate and sufficient.
In terms of the evaluation of the code, presumably you'll run it on your own computers or the machinery that's been provided by the applicants to make sure that that it does certain things and that it doesn't do certain other things and that it can't, and presumably that it can't be made to do yet other things. Is that a good general proposition about that?
Well, we don't run the software on anything other than the vendor-supplied equipment.
Okay.
They must supply the hardware.
Okay, and again, in general terms, how do you assure yourself and therefore NACID and FEC and state officials that the machine, to simplify the question, can't be hacked?
Well, you didn't let me. Let me go on to tell you what qualification testing doesn't mean.
Okay.
Because we have a charter as defined by the VSS and NACID.
Right.
Qualification testing does not mean that testing has been sufficient to confirm a voting system meets the specific laws of any state
right.
at all.
Right.
And that is the responsibility of the state certification testing.
Okay. Now, part of this complication is the fact that there's a federal government and 50-plus state governments, and they each have particular responsibilities.
Yes.
How does that impact your role in the process? You're essentially, well, you tell us, what do you have any, compare your relationship with the federal government with your relationship with the 50 state governments.
Yeah, well, when you look at voting systems, there's really four levels of testing that they need to go through.
Okay.
The first level is the vendor testing.
Right.
The vendor needs to test it sufficiently before they even pass it off to the ITA.
Right.
Then we do our qualification testing. That's the second level.
Right.
The third level is the state certification. That's where the state needs to go in and make sure that it meets their specific legislation and rules.
Right.
And the final level is the local acceptance testing. That's really the user acceptance testing.
Right.
And all four of those levels of tests need to be included in any good software test, and particularly for voting systems.
But in fact, you can't get to the state certification process until you've gone through the ITA qualification process. Is that right?
Well, in 38...
In most states or some, huh?
Yeah. The NACID certification is voluntary by the states.
How do you mean?
It's not by any mandate. The states, since they are in charge of voting
right.
within their state,
right.
they decide whether or not they will require the NACID certification.
And of the 50 states, how many do you know?
About 38.
38 of the, that's interestingly enough the same number it takes to qualify a constitutional amendment, I think. But in any case, it's two-thirds of the states. They require that the ITA qualification process be done and passed before they'll consider it a system for certification.
Well, some of them are stronger than others. Some of them review that it's been certified, but they don't require it. Others do require it.
Okay, and that would leave 12 that don't seem to care about that part of the process, right? If 38 require it, 12 don't.
Yeah. And there are 12 that have not adopted this. And for whatever reason.
Right, and that means a voting machine vendor can take their machine directly to those states and not pass GO and not pass ITA and just have it be considered by the states, according to whatever criteria they have in mind.
That's correct.
And still get HAVA money to upgrade their technology?
Well, with HAVA, this is the current system with HAVA and EAC coming in.
Right.
I am unaware of how it will be set up.
Because obviously HAVA has billions of dollars to give out, and states are eager to get it, and presumably they would... So as far as you know, there's no federal requirement that ITA testing be done as part of the process for states that are getting HAVA money.
At this point, I'm not tuned into that.
Okay.
I'm afraid I don't know an answer to that one.
Say a little bit in concrete terms, if you can, comparing what you do to test these hardware and software systems compared to what you do with other products, because SysTest just doesn't spend all of its time working on voting systems.
We don't.
Right.
Yeah.
Say a little bit about your general clientele and what kind of things you do in general, and then how the voting systems relate to that.
Okay. The voting systems are completely a different animal. We do some independent verification and validation work where we test solely to the IEEE 1012 standards.
Right.
We also do general QA, and that's kind of the 80-20 rule.
To the non-professionals, that would be quality assurance.
So sorry.
It's okay. That's what I'm here for.
And, we do a lot of commercial software. We do some government software, and then, of course, we do the voting. We have worked within banks, and so we have worked with the different standards, and some of us come from the background within DOD, the Department of Defense, and
right.
So we have the background of testing the software, mission-critical software. For ITA, the VSS really does guide us. We were audited by NASFED and granted our ability to qualify the software. Our quality assurance manual that we put together is based on the VSS. All our processes are based on the VSS. And the VSS has basically two lines of work to do. There's a physical configuration audit and a functional configuration audit. And that's all called out specifically in the VSS, which is available online.
Okay. How would you describe the relationship between Percept Technology Labs and SysTest now in terms of being an ITA? Are you partners? Are they a subsidiary? Mutual contractors? What's the relationship like now?
It's a subcontract relationship,
okay.
And we are a provisional hardware ITA, which means that our audit was successfully completed and that NASFED has recommended accreditation, but they are going to sit with us during our first hardware ITA and audit us during that process.
Now, has this alliance of sorts precipitated a lot more business?
No.
No.
Sorry, no.
What do you see in the long run that it should or will?
I don't know.
Okay. I was told by some of the people, the company I spoke to earlier, that SysTest is a, quote, woman-owned company.
Yes.
What does that mean? I mean, it seems obvious what it means, but what's the significance of that, and how woman-owned is it?
Well, we're 52% woman-owned. Myself, Carolyn Coggins, and Catherine Phillips own the major part of the company.
Right.
For voting, woman-owned really doesn't mean much.
Right.
But for other contracts in the federal arena that we may pursue, it does carry some weight. We are a certified small business enterprise.
So, meaning that when contracts are distributed, there's an advantage to being a woman-owned company, according to whatever federal regulations govern the award of these contracts?
Yes.
Okay. Does it make any difference one way or another way or any way that it is a woman-owned company in terms of the way it's run?
Well, it's run by women other than that.
Right. Right. This was a question about whether women's management style differs generically from men's management style, in your opinion.
Oh, in my opinion?
Yes.
Probably, but I'm too thick in it to be able to see the forest for the trees.
Okay. Does this position you as the only company that's has this integrated capability for ITA testing?
At the moment, yes.
Okay. Are you envisioning anybody else is going to now, some other alliances will form in order to respond to this?
I'm not sure, but the EAC, the newly formed EAC, which is taking over the FEC, announced at the testimony and before the House a few weeks ago that they hope to be taking applications for hardware and software ITAs coming this December. So we have no idea at this time how many companies will step up or what even the qualification and the auditing process will be to become an ITA.
Okay, would you say, I mean, I'm wondering why there aren't half a dozen or 10 of them. I mean, there are plenty of car companies. Is this testing a kind of thankless job that doesn't really bear being invested in by a lot of companies?
I would guess so.
Okay.
We are a company of testers, so of course
right.
we think it's the only thing to do.
Okay.
But we, and we do have a lot of competition in the commercial world.
Right.
But if you remember, cyber had been the only software ITA for a number of years before we became certified.
Right, because an essence of a free market is competition. You like to have multiple vendors so that a system doesn't have a single point of failure if one of the companies goes out of business, obviously.
But,
Could you say, just try to create a picture of what the testing looks like? I see labs every week on CSI. Is the lab there a real lab with benches and lots of sockets and whatnot? What does the lab look like exactly?
What is CSI?
Here's
an acronym on me.
You go. I got you there. It's a crime scene investigation. It's a TV show. There's CSI based in Las Vegas, the CSI Miami based in Miami, and they're making a new one, CSI New York.
I wouldn't imagine we look like that. We are an office building. We do have several voting labs so that when a voting company comes in, their equipment goes into that lab, and of course it's lockable. And the software is never put on the network. The software is always contained within that voting lab on a local area network that is all the wires are contained within that area. And we do close the door, so if one vendor comes in, they don't even know that another one is there, and we make sure they never run into each other, so there's no vision into someone else's system.
Right. How much do vendors have to pay to get the system tested to as approximate as you're willing to say?
Well, it solely depends on how prepared they are. We are set up, as are the other ITAs, as a time and material.
Right.
And if they are prepared and they have all their documentation in line and they've done a great job of doing functional testing and we do our functional tests and we don't find any problems, it's a very quick and painless and cheap process.
Okay.
But that...
Is that how they usually do it?
Well, no, but it is dependent on the vendor.
Okay, but the federal government in no sense pays for any of this. You get paid by the vendors.
Yes.
And if a vendor, a crackpot genius in the basement came up with something and didn't have any money, they'd be out of luck because the federal government doesn't pay for it.
Well, that's true, but there are several small players.
Right.
Industry, and there are one, two people shops out there.
Right.
And they either get investment backing or they
mortgage their house.
Or they get acquired, yeah. But we've seen very small companies come through, and we've also seen small companies that haven't paid their bills.
Oh, okay. Any big companies not pay their bills?
No.
Okay. What's the role of NIST? That's the National Institute for Science and Technology. Does it play any role? Do you have any dealings with them in the process?
Yeah. It's our understanding that the EAC is contracting with NIST to develop new voting system standards.
Right. That's my understanding, as well as it's my understanding that the budget for that is zero.
The budget... The money hasn't been released.
Right.
There is a budget, and I believe it's moving. I don't know if the funds have been released.
Okay. Do you know much about how your counterparts in Europe operate, how they're similar, how they're dissimilar from the way certification and qualification are done in the United States, how they're done in Asia and Europe?
We have one client who is from Europe.
Right.
Who is actually bringing their equipment here to be certified to the federal voting standards so that they can attempt to sell in the United States.
Oh, you mean they already have a voting system that they're using in Europe?
Yeah.
And they bring it to you. Do you ever get involved in testing systems for companies who are going to sell it outside of the United States?
No, we have not. We've had several companies inquire if they could,
right?
Because they felt that having a NASFED certification number might help them that they're certified to some sort of standards, because the countries that they're selling into don't have any certifications.
Right. So I would think whether, in that sense, the American standards could become global standards if some country that barely has an infrastructure wants to do voting, and they get them certified according to U.S. standards, that would give some kind of benchmark about how good they are.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we have been approached, but we haven't been put under contract.
Okay. Say just a little bit more about the relationship between all this HAVA money and what you're doing. It's essential in those states that require it, the 38 states, but it's just generally kind of an option in the other ones?
Well, you know, the system is changing. I've been
right.
talking about how the NAFED and the FEC have worked.
Right.
I have no insight as to how it will be in the future.
Okay. Now, speaking of the present, are many of the machines that you've been testing lately DREs? And this is the most acronym-laden discussion I think I've ever done. DREs, of course, are direct record electronic.
Direct recording equipment.
Direct recording equipment, right. And they're also more colloquially known as touchscreens.
They can be touchscreens. DREs don't necessarily have to be touchscreens.
There are non-touchscreen DREs?
Yeah.
Oh. What would they look like? How would they work?
If you look at Hardiner Civic...
Right.
They actually have a little spin wheel.
A little spin wheel, okay.
And so you're not actually touching the screen.
Right. Okay. But most of them, of course, are touchscreen machines.
Yeah, some of them are full-face ballot with sort of optic...
Right, input. The general question is, why are these machines so controversial? What can you add from your perspective as a company that tests them about why they've been so controversial and have caused so much of a stir in recent months?
I'm just as confused as everyone else is on why they are so controversial, perhaps because they're so new.
Right.
I've heard some good analogies to those grocery store scanners, price scanners, that when they originally went out, people were pretty... concerned about those as well as the ATM.
That's why people wanted a paper receipt, I guess, so that they wouldn't have to pay $40 for an orange.
Yeah.
So, do you do anything special? Are there any special procedures that you have to use to test these touchscreen systems?
Well, the standards for the DREs are documented in the 2002 VSS.
Okay.
So we do. There are specific requirements to address the DREs.
All right. The opponents of DREs make the argument that such a configuration is inherently unreliable, hackable, and subject to fraud and tampering. In your experience, is that true?
Well, in terms of attack code,
right.
The VSS does give us some guidance as to what to check for, and that those are our marching orders, and that's what we check against.
In other words... The VSS, the Voting System Standard, VSS, Voting System Standards, contain specifications about certain types of attack that need to be able to be countervailed against by the voting machine?
They address what we should be looking for in our code reviews.
Right.
They address that the physical security is the role of the jurisdiction.
Right.
But... One of our, at the testimony a few weeks ago in front of the House subcommittee, one of our recommendations to NIST and to EAC as they take this over is to provide the ITAs with better, with more in-depth guidance on this.
Right. Meaning a more thorough listing of the things you have to look out for.
Yes. Because currently the VSS does leave a great deal of discretion to the labs.
Right. Discretion about what?
About how deep we go.
Right.
And, you know, the role of the ITAs should be to hold the vendor's feet to the fire.
Right.
It shouldn't be to have to build the fire. We're looking for backing from the VSS, the EAC, NIST, to give us the ammunition.
Right. You're essentially executing the instructions there. You're kind of like the machine language of executing the instructions, but you're being programmed at a higher level by these organizations.
Yes.
Okay.
And we are asking for guidance.
All right. An issue that's very closely related to DREs, of course, is that of, and here come two more, VVPATs or VVPBs. These are voter verifiable paper audit trails / voter verifiable paper ballots. It's pretty much an interchangeable term. Are these subsystems now required according to any of the VSS standards?
Oh, no.
They're not required at all.
They are not.
Nobody has to have one, as far as you're concerned. So you don't test any of these?
Well,
because nobody, or do you?
Well, if the vendor has that capability, we, of course, test it.
According to what standards?
Well, we test it according to their requirements.
According to the requirements of the... Oh, in the same way, if Microsoft comes to you with a kind of program to do anything, you're going to... They're going to tell you what they want it to be able to do according to what standards, and you're going to test it for them.
Well, if they've got it in their documentation that they support paper audit trails, then we have to verify that they do support paper audit trails. That becomes part of our ITA analysis.
Right. So your analysis, your qualification there is according to their own published and expressed to you documentation.
Yes. They're not allowed to document a functionality that we do not...
Right.
Test.
Any functionality that they're documenting, you're going to make sure it can do it or know the reason why.
Yeah.
But if, okay, but if it says, okay, that's pretty clear. What impact have all of the discussions about accessibility have on what you do? Or again, is that something that's kind of outside of your area? You only have to document the or test for the accessibility according to whatever standards have been set in the documentation, or are there federal standards about accessibility?
Well, a big part of the change to the 2002 VSS was to add the ADA 508.
Okay, and in general, what does that require?
That is the accessibility, the font size, the physical location of the machine,
right?
The ability for certain handicaps to be able to vote.
So those are now part of the VSS.
Yeah.
And every machine that you test has to meet those standards, along with all the other ones that it has previously had to meet or currently has to meet. Okay. Does that involve now? I'm not sure this is something that is going to come through your lab there, but the relationship between the DREs, the VVPATs, and accessibility have been argued to a fairly well here in California, and I've written some stuff about it and done some articles about it addressing the issue of what constitutes accessibility if you're going to have a voter verified paper audit trail. And in particular, how a blind person can be expected to okay a paper trail if he or she can't see it. And in fact, Kevin Shelley's latest and court-upheld version of the requirements for voting machines in California says that that has to be included either as a output from the system before it's printed or as a output from the system after the verifiable paper ballot, voter verified paper ballot has been produced. Does any of that come into what the testings that you're doing, or is that more or less a political issue in California and not really anywhere else?
Well, it will impact us when the voting systems start reacting to those changes. Then we will test to the requirement that that the vendors have said they now meet those requirements.
Okay, so you're saying when the combination of what Kevin Shelley is doing politically and legally and what the federal government decides to do about it finally eventuates in additional standards from the EAC, you'll then be ready to test for those according to those standards.
Well, if the vendors don't need to wait for the federal standards to change to make improvements to their voting system.
As long as the systems live up to the documentation.
Yes.
So if Kevin Shelley says this and says what the standards have to be in California, and the vendors say, officials in other states say, we want one of those too, and the vendors all decide they want to satisfy Kevin Shelley's requirements in California so they can sell in California and other states that want to emulate California, you will test to whatever standards they're going to document in their documentation that they're going to want to take to the state officials to say, we're meeting these standards.
Yeah, if they're saying we have this functionality, we will verify that they do have that functionality.
Right, and all that will go on whether NIST gets any money, whether EAC has a meeting, or the federal government does anything.
Yes.
this can go on between the vendors and you and the states.
Yeah, that is all part of the current process.
Okay. Let me ask the bonus question here. What about remote internet voting systems? Have you ever tested any?
No, we have not. We did propose on... Oh, I was going to say an acronym, and now I can't remember what it stands for. The FVAP, the Federal Voting Assistance Program.
You know, the FVAP, the Federal Voting Assistance Program, and it's and the a very important the Uniform Overseas Citizen Voting Assistance Voting Act, UCAVA. Maybe I've got it wrong.
You're close. And then there's CERV, and that's another acronym.
Well, CERV is something that I'll have to admit I know more about than anybody else because I've written 70 articles about it. And it was intended to be – it's also known as the UVS or UCAVA voting system.
Yeah.
And it was set up by FVAP, which is the Federal Voting Assistance Program, which is designed to help military people and overseas citizens vote. And they spent $22 million on it, and it was a report came out in January that from some computer scientists who were hired by FVAP to analyze it, and they wrote that was the first of a series of reports that have been coming out all over the world lately that are characterized as scathing. This was a scathing attack on the inability of anyone to build a secure remote internet voting system given the sieve-like quality of the internet, and they canceled the program, and it's now being debated. Well, it's not actually being debated. It's pending. A decision on reinstituting it is pending in Congress, although no one there apparently knows this is going on, except for me, because I've been trying to find out what's going on with it. And I'm wondering if you have any insight into the viability of a remote internet voting system, given that CERV experience and anything else you know from your testing of voting systems.
Well, we were excited to perhaps be a part of that, but we didn't win the RFP.
Oh, you mean you were going to build it?
No, we were going to be the ITA for it.
Oh.
They put the ITA out for competitive bid.
Right.
And it was different than the normal ITA because, of course, it wasn't to the current standards because the current standards don't address internet voting. So part of it was to help develop the standards.
Oh,
and unfortunately, we were not a part of that process.
Did another company get? I don't want to give them too much advertising. Maybe you want to tell me off the air. But did another company get that ITA contract?
Yes, the other software ITA beat us.
And did they work with CERV, as far as you know, to develop those standards?
I have no insight into.
Because I asked the Pentagon half a dozen times, and I asked FEC and EAC at least as many times. According to what standards are you going to test the internet voting system, CERV?
Well, it was part of the RFP to develop those standards.
Oh, and so as far as you know, it was the other ITA that got that contract and may or may not have been working with CERV in the interim to develop them.
Yeah.
So I'll have to check with them and find out what they can tell me.
Yeah, it's kind of a sore subject for me.
Yes, well, it was frustrating to me because I could barely get anyone to acknowledge that there was a problem there, that there weren't standards. They said, well, the Pentagon spokesman would say, we're going to certify it. I'd say, according to what standards? And he didn't seem to understand the question. So... But now you've told me a little bit more, so I can go get frustrated at a higher level in another direction. So, So we've talked about CERV a little bit, and there have been some criticisms that the entire process of testing, qualifying, and certifying voting machines is too closed from public scrutiny. This interview that I'm doing with you now is the first extended interview I've ever heard of about this. There are people who have been calling for the publication of what vendors like to call proprietary code that runs their machines. Do you think that the publication of DRE and other voting machine code should be required, would be in the interest of greater openness and transparency? And would it present any problem for you to do that?
It would not present a problem for us.
Right.
Either way. I really don't have any opinion. I mean, I've heard arguments on both sides.
Right.
And I would leave that to other authorities.
Okay. So you would have, from your point of view, if the rules changed and said, well, obviously you wouldn't be the people making it public. They'd make it public, and you'd still test. It wouldn't really affect what you did.
That's right.
You'd just carry on with your testing. So are there any steps being planned that you know about that will take place in the near future to make the testing qualification process and the ITA part of that process more transparent to the public?
Well, you know, from my perspective, we are fairly transparent. Carolyn has testified before the House in California.
Right.
We have testified in front of the
Congress.
Yeah, the House subcommittee in Washington.
Right.
The VSS is available to anyone who wants it.
Right.
Open on the internet.
I guess the question has to do with the proprietary code that the vendors create in order to execute the procedures that are called for in the VSS.
Oh, well, that again is, that's outside of my purview.
Okay.
We sign non-disclosures with the vendors,
right,
as is standard practice in any commercial enterprise.
Right.
So that is how we do the business.
Do you think elections are a special case where the normal, obviously if you reveal source code of one competitor, that you can be sure that the competitors will be out there at this right way to look at it and see, you know, how they can do better. But that's kind of like a free market competition process that might be good, even if it might cut into the profit margins of some of the companies.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that would be handled.
Okay.
I would be interested to see it work.
Okay. What do you consider the biggest challenges to you in your work doing this voting machine testing?
You know, as with all testing work, the biggest challenges is our schedule control.
I'm sorry, is what control?
Schedule control.
Schedule control.
Vendors say they're coming in tomorrow and it's 3 weeks.
Right.
Or they say they're coming in a month and it's 2 months.
Right. So it's human engineering factors, not technical engineering factors.
That's right.
Okay. What are your biggest satisfactions doing this work?
Well, we do consider that our work is valuable. I mean, we think we're performing a very valuable service here. And when we've looked at the software and issued our report, we disclose within that report everything we've found.
Right.
That report goes to NASED, and that's what they use to determine if they should certify the system based on our report.
Right.
Now, the report is available through the vendor.
Right.
And my mantra at the IACRIOT, or any time I talk to any Secretary of State's office, is say, ask for the report.
Right.
And I'm not getting my message out because our phone's not ringing. People aren't asking us to send them the report.
So you're saying the report that you produce for the vendor, is the vendor has it, and are they required to give it out if people ask for it? Or
the state should require them to deliver it, yes.
But you're not sure whether they do or not.
Well, I don't think they know to ask for it in
right,
too many cases.
All right, well, let's say it again then. If people want to see the reports, they should contact the vendors and ask for them.
Yes.
Okay. I ask this only because the news has been so full of reports that have been allegedly biased by people higher up trying to bias them. Are you ever subject to any kind of untoward influence by any of the vendors who say, well, yeah, it doesn't work, but, you know, we're going to fix it next year, or maybe you'd like a nice trip to St. Lucia or something? Does that ever come up in this business?
No, it never does come up. And we're under strict guidelines within our own quality assurance manual. We can't even accept a lunch,
right,
or a drink or anything from the vendors.
Okay.
And we live within that.
All right.
And quite honestly, they don't offer.
All right. Okay.
So, no, we make sure that they meet the federal standards, and there's no play in that.
What percentage of the vendors of the machines submitted to you meet the standards on the first go around?
A small percentage.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And then are they usually then, you give them what essentially is a list of what they have to fix?
Well, it's an iterative process. As we're
right,
doing the testing, we're telling them, we do daily status reports. We're telling them what they found.
Right.
What we found, why it won't meet the federal standards.
Right.
And in the line of defect report. And each one of our defects that goes to them goes with, here's the reason why it doesn't meet the federal standards.
So you provide a very valuable service both in finding things that aren't working according to the standards.
Yes.
So you're essentially troubleshooting it for them. And then presumably do they then as the defect reports come in, try to fix each one, and then by the time it's over, do they have to pay you to go do it all again, or how does that work?
It's an iterative process. They'll give us another software drop.
Right.
And then we'll regression test.
Right.
And make sure that the functionality is back in there. And then we keep doing our code review through all these iterations, looking at the new code,
right.
doing analysis throughout it, so that all the code has been reviewed at the end. We can, you know, vendors are giving us numerous code drops.
A code drop is a revised version of the software?
Yes.
By the end, what percentage of the vendors that submit equipment become qualified?
Well, vendors typically will stop the ITA process prior to the issuing of a report if they know they're not going to make it.
Okay.
And we've had a significant number of vendors go away for months, sometimes years.
Right.
And put their system in order because paying to get a report that says we do not recommend certification is not a good return on investment.
That's kind of a lose-lose situation. You got to pay the money and you got to get not qualified. So.
We did have one vendor that insisted we continue.
Right.
We issued a report recommending not to
right.
certify, and NASED agreed with us, and that was kind of the end of it.
Okay. Have you been experiencing many new startups in this field, or is it the same big players who provide most of your business?
There are a lot of startups.
There are? More so recently than in the past?
Well...
Depending on how you define the past, of course.
Yeah, that's... You know, we haven't been in this for years and years and years and years, but I believe the statistics were there were about 7 big players in 2000, and I think there's around 50-some-odd voting
really?
System companies now.
Okay.
So we have had a lot of newcomers.
Okay. Just to clarify a point of something we talked about a few minutes ago, once the EAC and or NASED and possibly the rival ITA develop remote internet voting system standards, you'll be ready to test systems according to them,
yes.
right?
Yes.
You're willing to do that? You're looking forward to doing that once the standards are in place?
Oh, yes. We love to test.
Oh, okay. Good. Any last thing you want to say about the testing process, this test, and the work you're doing there?
No, I can't think of anything else to add.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for providing us with all this information. We've now increased several fold, I think, the amount of available information about the ITA process. And hopefully a lot of people now, maybe, who knows, maybe some people will decide to go into the business and you get some new hires eventually. So
good.
Let's see what happens. Thank you again very much for talking to us on Utopia Media Voting News.
Well, thank you.
All right, bye.
Bye.